This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person, contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 647, Ask Farnoosh.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Welcome to So Money, everyone. November 3rd, 2017. It's Ask Farnoosh Friday. No co-host today because life just caught up with me and I just didn't have time to schedule a co-host for this particular episode. If you've been following me, you know that I've been planes, trains, automobiles for the past 3 weeks, traveling, hosting different things around town, and I'm finally home. And it's 4 a.m. because this is the only time that I found to actually record this podcast, 4 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. That is 48 hours until this episode airs. So this is cutting it pretty close for me than normal. But I actually read an article in the Wall Street Journal that said that 4 a.m. is the most productive hour of the day for a lot of people. Maybe not for you. And I certainly didn't think for me. This is an experiment. I'm up at 4 a.m. Truth be told, I was up at 3:45. My daughter woke up and I tried not to give her a bottle at 3:45 in the morning because that could turn into a bad habit. But what do you do, parents? I mean, she normally gets up at 4:35 for a bottle and it was like 3:45. Here's the trade-off. If I don't feed her, she wakes up the whole house, including her brother, and then that's a whole other kind of morning. So I just gave her a bottle. But my other friends who have children, they're like, you don't feed a child at 8 months a bottle in the middle of the night because it's like giving an adult cake in the middle of the night. Well, guess what's going to happen the next night? They're going to wake up for cake. So I don't know. It hasn't quite become an evening ritual or middle of the night ritual yet, but it happens sometimes. So my daughter basically prepared me for this 4 a.m. maybe ritual that's going to become a way for me to catch up on work and life. My to-do list right now is this podcast and some other podcasting homework, housekeeping, and to avoid social media. But that's been a little challenging. I've actually been on Twitter talking about this 4 a.m. experiment. We'll see. I mean, I'd like to be a morning person. I like to be an early riser. And it seems like life is pushing me in that direction. So all this to say that I'm really happy to be here. Also, newsflash, News flash. I can't believe I buried the lead. This podcast has reached, just this week, just about like 24 hours ago, 5 million downloads. I wish I had some sort of like sound effect, and I can't really make too much noise because everybody's asleep, but I'm really excited. This is a big deal. It's a big threshold for the show. Lately, we've been just getting a ton of traffic thanks to some really great guests, including Simon Sinek and others. Also, just been getting some great press around the show lately in various online sites. So I'm just so thrilled that this is how we're capping 2017. And so now I'm under a little bit more pressure for going into the new year. How can I take this podcast to the next level? I'm actually meeting with some people today to talk about that, but I'm open to your thoughts. I mean, what do you think? Should I go to video? I don't really send emails out every single time I have a podcast guest. I feel like I don't want to annoy everybody that's on the email list, but maybe I should start doing that because y'all who are on the email list, you're very engaged and I don't think you'd mind. I think you're on the list because you want to stay connected. So knowing when there's a new episode is helpful, I think. But let me know what could change, what could improve, where would you like to see the podcast go? My friend Lewis Howes, you know, School of Greatness, 45 million downloads for his show. And I want to get to that point. I want to get from 5 to 45. I know it's not going to happen in a year, but maybe it could. I don't know. I am just one person running this ship for the most part. I have a great small team, but I'm the one thinking long-term. I'm the one who has to sort of think about next steps. So I would really appreciate your feedback. But 5 million downloads, guys, pretty excited. Thank you so much to you, first and foremost, for being so supportive and just being with me on this journey. I definitely feel like while a podcast can be this very solo venture, you know, it's just me, my mic, my laptop, a Wi-Fi connection, and a guest somewhere miles and miles away. But I know that I have this very caring audience, you all, and I'm so deeply grateful for you. This is really just an example of what can happen when you build community around something inspiring, which I hope this show is. So thank you so much. And if you would like to co-host Ask Farnoosh with me, I promise you won't have to wake up at 4 a.m. to do this. This is not a requirement, but if you would like to co-host Ask Farnoosh with me, as I've been getting co-hosts now for the past couple of months from the listening domain, from the listenership, send me an email at farnoosh@farnoosh.tv, or you can go to somoneypodcast.com and click on Ask Farnoosh. And from there, we can get connected and let me know there that you want to co-host. And hopefully we can find a time that works for the two of us. All right. This week we have questions from Christina and James and Jared and Tiffany and Lorena, things related to the podcast, things related to retirement, employer reimbursements. James is really not happy about a situation with his employer paying him back a measly 53 cents for every mile when he uses a car sharing service like Uber. So we'll talk about his dilemma and then some other questions involving home purchasing and everything in between. So let's start with Christina, okay? She has a question about her ability to pay off credit card debt. And she's been listening to this podcast and saying that it has helped her with her money. Glad to hear that, Christina. She says, your podcast has made me rethink my relationship with money, but for some reason still can't pay down the $14,000 in credit card debt. So she wants to know, what is a good first step? So my advice, not knowing anything else and just this fact that you're having trouble with this $14,000 in credit card debt, I don't know how much you make. I don't know how much other kinds of debt you may have. Don't know how much you have in savings. Don't know your spending. So if you don't like my answer, you can always reply and give me some more variables so I can get a better sense of what you're dealing with. But I would say, Christina, first step in any debt pay down journey is to not look at the numbers, not be overwhelmed by the amount or your current financial situation, but to get motivated. Sounds like you need some motivation that can catalyze you to actually take the tactical steps to get out of debt. So the first thing you probably want to do is think about life after debt. How will getting rid of $14,000 in credit card debt improve your life? Specifically, imagine it, think about it. What will this afford you? Will this mean that you can then maybe get out of your living situation that you're not too happy about? Would it mean that you could save more, which would help you to sleep better at night? Would it mean that you could be able to get closer to buying that house, taking that trip, leaving your job? Because as we know, when we're financially independent, we have courage and confidence and financial runway to take more risks in life. And so think about what this could afford you, the few things, the many things, or that just that one really exciting thing, and visualize it. Print out a picture, put that picture as a screensaver on your laptop, on your phone, put that front and center and have that be the carrot to get you across the finish line. And then of course, there are many things you can do to tactically get yourself out of this $14,000 in debt. The first is to obviously look at how you're spending, find the leaks, take any extra penny that you don't need to be spending on other things and allocate it towards this debt. So hopefully you're paying far more than just that minimum. Do whatever you can to double, triple, quadruple that minimum payment every single month. You can timeline it out. If your goal is to get out of debt in 3 years or 16 months or 2 years, whatever goal you set for yourself, work backwards. Figure out financially what is that going to mean for you month to month to get out of this $14,000 in debt, and commit to that amount. And that means trade-offs in your lifestyle, in your current spending. It was my guest, John Capitanias, who told me in our audience that after he got out of, I think it was like $100,000 in debt, and a lot of that was student loans, he had this realization that anyone can do it, but how quickly you're able to get yourself out of debt depends on how uncomfortable you're willing to get. That was a really popular episode. John is a producer at ABC News and also lately been a real financial inspiration to a lot of people as he's been sharing his own get out of debt journey. So maybe listen to that episode because there was a ton of takeaway there. But how uncomfortable are you willing to get? That's a good question. Everyone, we should all be asking ourselves when it comes to trying to get to the next level in our finances. And it's not to say that you have to, you know, live a terrible life. I think it's just really, it goes back to what are the trade-offs that you're willing to make? And guess what? It's just temporary, right? It's just temporary. And for John, the trade-off was, I'm going to just work my tail off. So he worked a lot to the detriment of a little bit of his health. He wasn't getting a lot of sleep. And I don't know if he would have maybe gone back and done the whole thing again the same way, but it certainly did help to get him out of debt within, I think, a year or two. That's a lot of money to get rid of in just 12, 24 months. But it's his story, and not everyone's story is going to be like that. But I think that the advice that we need to sort of think about what shifts we're going to have to make, what shifts will this goal require, is very important. But again, it's all about the goal, right? Our money is meaningless without real goals attached to them. Because you could just spend or save or get out of debt for the sake of getting out of debt and saving and making more money. But it's much more meaningful, much more powerful when we can create goals and missions around how we are moving our money. That's my bit of advice for you, Christina. But like I said, since I don't know the rest of it, I don't know the whole financial picture that you're facing, this advice may be falling flat, but I hope not. I think this could be the pep talk at 4 a.m. that you need. And I look forward to hearing from you and how this is maybe helping you, or if you have any extra questions.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/somoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/somoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/somoney.
Lorena says she just opened up a Roth IRA with $500. She has a rollover IRA with $48,000 in it and wants to know, should she also open a SEP IRA because she's an independent contractor? Well, Lorena, I do think there are benefits to having a SEP IRA. Now that you're an independent contractor, you're probably making maybe more money than you were in the past. And with a SEP IRA, I speak from experience, I also contribute to one, you have the opportunity to invest more than you could invest with a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA. You can invest up to, I believe it's $54,000 this year, tax deductible for now, thanks to the IRS. With a traditional IRA or Roth IRA, you're capped at $5,500. Per year contribution. If you're 50 and over, it's $6,500 a year. So it's about, you know, 40 some extra $1,000 that you can contribute to a SEP IRA. And if you're somebody who feels like, you know, you're making the kind of income that could support that and you need to increase retirement savings, this could be a great vehicle to do that. And you can open it up pretty much anywhere. I have one through brokerage. These are available widely, and I would suggest maybe going first to wherever you have that rollover IRA or that Roth IRA and seeing if you can also open up a SEP IRA there as well. Okay, James has a question about Ugh, James. His employer is only giving him 53 cents back for every mile when he uses a ride-sharing service to commute to and from work, which is, I find that unusual. So he wants to know, should he fight for a full refund at this point? And he gives a little bit more background. He doesn't have a car, so it's not like he has a lot of other choices. I assume, James, that you don't also have public transportation, like a subway or a bus. I don't know. This is sort of odd because I guess this is just an indication that some companies aren't catching up to the times. Eventually, I think that companies are going to have to change their policies just because I do think people are going to be buying, at least people within metropolitan areas, yep, millennials, we're not buying cars, right? And pretty soon, I think it's going to be harder and harder to convince someone to pay for a car than to maybe create a budget around car sharing or ride sharing, especially now with the way things are headed, self-driving cars. I see a future where we're not going to be attached to car payments on, you know, a vehicle. Though, hey, look, some people are just car fanatics and I get that. But in general, I see that there's going to be a movement, right, away from just buying a car outright. So at that point, maybe employers will realize that this kind of reimbursement is not that applicable because you're not just paying for gas, right? You're paying for a ride and that's more expensive. So it's more money out of your pocket. I don't know if there's really anything you can do at this point, James. You could certainly bring it up to the attention of HR and I recommend that you do. A lot of times companies don't change policies until employees speak up. And I'm sure that you're probably not alone. Maybe ask around the office, do a survey. Are there other people in your shoes? And if there are, perhaps you could all go in for a group ask. It's always safety in numbers sometimes when you're asking for things at work. They realize you're just not one person, but that they could be making a policy change that could benefit a large number of employees. Go for that. That's what I would do. I would ask around, see who else is in this boat, who's in this camp. Can we go in on a group meeting to HR or our managers and just say like, hey, this is actually a big chunk out of our expenses that we have to pay for out of pocket. And then I would also talk to your accountant, someone doing your taxes or your bookkeeper to see if this is something that could fall under an itemized deductible category. Like this is actually an expense that is directly related to the job that you do. If your employer is not reimbursing you much, maybe there's a way to make up for it through your tax filing. So talk to your HR. So talk to HR, preferably go in with a group, and also talk to an accountant about working this into your tax deductions. All right, Jared has a question. He was in a fender bender a few months back. Hope you're okay, Jared. And his insurance raised his monthly bill by $75, as they do. Any website or resources that I would recommend to browse quotes? Absolutely, Jared. So everyone should do this, right? Any recurring insurance bill that we have is subject to competition, as I say. I mean, like there's so many places that you can go to get virtually the same kind of insurance that would compete for your business by offering you a lower rate. You can go to nerdwallet.com. They've actually got a section on their website that compares over 50 companies for you for free. And this is specifically car insurance. You can go to insurance.com, another site that's been around for a long time that gives you quotes online from multiple top insurance carriers for free. I will just say that a lot of these sites, sometimes you got to be sure you want to do this because if you have to input like your email at all, expect some people following up with you. And then if you're not really in the mood, it can be kind of annoying. So just be sure that you're serious when you participate online with forgetting any of these free quotes. That's kind of the price that you pay is the follow-up. Sometimes you get some marketers coming at you. Esurance.com is popular as well. And then I would also talk to your current insurance company and say, look, I know that I'm probably due for this rate hike because I'm now not as trustworthy as a driver. I got into this fender bender. I mean, that's really what the underwriters are thinking. They need to be risk managing their side of the business. But let them know that you're going to probably have to shop around now. And because this is expensive, this is $75 times 12 months. That's a lot of money. And see what they say. see what they say. They may be able to cut a deal with you. A lot of times insurance quotes are negotiable. So it's just a matter of speaking up or letting them know that you have found better quotes elsewhere and see what they say. And Tiffany, last but not least, wants to know my thoughts on purchasing a mobile home. She says she lives in the San Francisco area and that there are some manufactured houses, beautifully done, only $300,000. Is it a good investment? Well, first of all, a $300,000 home in San Francisco sounds like a steal to me. That said, I'm not encouraging you to yet go out and do this deal. I also want to say that anytime anyone comes to me and says, is this home purchase a good investment? I get concerned. Now, you're talking to the woman who loves making a profit off of anything, and especially real estate. I live in New York City. I get it. There's this mentality around purchasing homes and apartments that, you know, in 10 years, in 5 years, it'll appreciate. And because we've been spoiled here, we have that mentality. Homes do appreciate. And I'm certainly in San Francisco, that is, I'm pretty sure the case as well. It's a very expensive market and it's just continuing to increase in value, these real estate prices. But I would caution that you're going into this, looking at it maybe solely as an investment. Hopefully this is also a place where you'll want to, you know, settle in, and it's a mobile home. So I'm really sure how that works. I'm not familiar with mobile home purchases. To answer your first question, so my thoughts are limited around what the risks may be to this. I would definitely not rush into anything like this. I mean, buying a home is a big deal. So talk to other people who've done it, not the people who are selling you mobile homes or the people who are actually living in the mobile homes. There's probably communities out there, but start talking to people who've actually made these kinds of purchases in the last 1 to 3 years in your area and ask them, you know, are they happy? Any things that they've learned the hard way? What would they recommend if they were themselves 3 years ago, a year ago when they did this? What advice would they have given themselves? I think you'll discover a lot of important things that way. Think about this less as an investment and more as a place to live and live for a long time, maybe 5, 10, 15 years. I don't know if that's the trajectory of most mobile home owners. Maybe this is like a stepping stone to then getting that bigger or more established home in a neighborhood. But don't be upset if this doesn't appreciate as much as you had hoped or at all. Because that's just the nature of anything that we buy. You risk that it doesn't increase in value. And so you want to be sure that if you're going to spend $300,000 on this property, that you're going to be okay selling this in the future and maybe not making much of a profit. Is that okay with you? In the meantime, are you going to save money on rent? Probably. In San Francisco, rent's crazy. Are you going to be able to enjoy where you're living, how you're living, the lifestyle? If yes, that's also important. So it's not to say that this is not a good deal just because you're not going to increase the equity in the home, but what are the other benefits to doing this? Make a pros cons list, Tiffany. And if anyone on the show listening knows anything about mobile homes, let me know. I have your email, Tiffany, so I can definitely send you some additional information, but good luck. And that is a wrap, everybody. Thank you so much to our listeners who wrote in questions. And just want to say one more time, if you want to co-host the show with me, I am still interested in continuing this, at least on the show. I know I'm looking for maybe making some changes in the new year and hoping that you'll give me some input as to the direction this show should take. But I think that co-hosting with listeners has been a really smart move for me. I get to know who you are, what's on your money mind, really connect on a deeper level with the audience. And then also, I hope you're having fun as a co-host. So you come on and you get to, you know, just talk shop with me for 35, 40 minutes. But you can go to somoneypodcast.com, click on Ask Farnoosh, and send me a question there, but also let me know you want to co-host for any upcoming episodes. And I hope that we'll connect. Thanks, Christina, Lorena, James, Jared, and Tiffany for your questions. Thank you for listening. And I hope your weekend is so money. hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person, contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.